welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's a great day to be in South Carolina. I think the rain might have left us alone for a while. Although, you know, after crossing 85 and looking at Lake Hartwell for so many years when it was 8, 9, 10, 12 feet down, I don't think I'm going to complain too much about the rain. You know, we all need it. I just hope it didn't wash away all the seed I planted in my food plots last week. Anyway, it's going to be a great show. Got some good guests today. And you know what? It's fall. It's a lot happening outside. And, you know, fishing's one of them. So let's go right to the phones because we've got an Easy Ways fishing update with Captain Patrick Crawford. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm doing good. It's kind of funny you actually bring up about how low the lakes used to be. The St. Cooper lakes are down right now quite a bit. I don't know if anybody's seen all the tops of the stumps are showing out there in the lakes right now because they're not letting they're letting so much water go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just saw that yesterday. My dad's like, if anybody wants to go out and go stump hopping right now, it's the perfect time to go do it. You see every single stump in the lake.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we'll get the fishing report. One of the times I remember when Lake Hartwell was down, I believe it was 2008, the Bassmaster Classic was here. And I was out there, if you can imagine this, in my flats boat amongst a bunch of bass boats. And you can imagine the looks I was getting. But we were up in, Martin Creek. And, you know, at that time, the cord going out and put out all sorts of buoys, marking channels and all. And there were two bass boats coming up through that creek, and one of them hit a stump, went airborne, and I think tore the foot off his motor at the same time. So those stumps can be bad when the water's low.
Oh, I've seen that too many times to even count. The funny thing you bring up about the flat boat in the bass term, I did that one time. This old redneck fella coming in here. What's that motor cover over the top of the motor pole?
Keep
it from overheating when it's too sunny out.
Or keep the sun and rain off of it. Yeah, I've got that same question too. Well, where are we going fishing? What are we doing?
Well, you know, we talked just real briefly about how low the lake is. We talked about how high everything else is.
Wow.
So let's go on to saltwater because we've been experiencing these major, huge high tides.
Yep.
And this is the time of the year we're experiencing our highest high tides of the entire year. So everybody's out chasing, tailing redfish.
Okay.
You know, the bite right now has been great. We've had a lot of rain over the course of this week, but in the tides this weekend are settling on down a little bit. We've had some tides here along the coast that have been like Georgia tides where they've been 7, almost 8 foot high.
Okay.
This week we're getting back into our, you know, 6 to 7 foot tides, you know. Yesterday, Friday, tide was 7 foot. We want them back in that 6 foot range
right.
We're getting into over the week.
Yeah.
So, redfish are up, they're tailing. You know, the water temperature's cooled off. One thing that I like to use whenever I'm chasing tailing redfish, I like to carry the fly rod.
Oh, yeah.
Lighter presentation.
Yep.
You know, I like to go with like something that's going to stand out to them. I like to use a golden crab. Type pattern or a white clouser. I know it sounds old school, but, you know, nothing beats the clouser.
That's right. Nothing beats the old school clouser.
You know, and, you know, with these big tides comes something you don't get very often here along the coast, and that's marsh hen hunting.
You know, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, if you're going to go and you're going to go out and chase your tailing redfish, yeah, go ahead and throw the shotgun on the boat at the same time. Go do a cast and blast trip.
Oh, yeah.
Go out there, move along. Marsh hen hunting is something that we don't get to do very often, and it's something that you have to experience at least once in your life. You know, they're the goofiest looking little brown bird you ever seen, but they're a ton of fun to go out and hunt up in the ground.
Okay, you brought it up. Now you're going to have to explain it a little bit. Because I've done it a couple of times. I don't know that a whole lot of people go down to Charleston just for marsh hen season, but actually Department of Natural Resources sets those seasons in conjunction with these super high tides because that's what you need to hunt those babies. So
give us
a little bit about what it takes to hunt a marsh hen.
So you're not allowed to use, first off, you're not allowed to use your engine whenever hunting marsh hen.
Okay.
I've seen guys out there running across trying to do it, and I've seen DNR out there right. So, if you're going to go marsh hen hunting, think about kind of, I would put it hunting for quail in a boat.
Okay.
That's about the easiest way I know how to put it.
All right.
So, you don't have to have a fancy, really super expensive flat boat, of course, pull and all that stuff. You can go out there in a gone boat. You just need, some type of push pole to be able to push your boat along, and somebody in the front to shoot them. But basically, the boat has now become a dog.
That's right.
So you're going through the grass, and these marsh hens, they're up and in the grass, and they're moving around in the flooded water. And whenever you push the boat up and through, it's just like a dog going in and chasing the quail up.
Yep.
Doing the same thing. That marsh hen's popping up, and as soon as he pops up, shoot the marsh hen. And I know I have a little bit of an accent, so we're not shooting marsh. We're shooting marsh hens.
Oh, very good. Well, y'all got some big news. I hope to talk to you a little bit more, but Easy Waves is in the news. So, good things are coming for you.
There's a lot of good things coming. We've got actually a couple of really big articles coming out.
Good.
We'll be in Forbes magazine next month as one of the businesses to watch. So, captains out there, we're going towards more than our normal crowd. I mean, right now, we're being published in Forbes. It's something that we never thought we'd see. And, FC Launch has stepped up and has believed in us. And we're in the Low Country Business, we're in the Business Journal right now.
Yep.
So, big things coming, and we're all over the place. I'm signing up guys in Texas right this minute today.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, give us the website.
If you're looking to go on a fishing trip, no matter where it is, just check us out at easywave.com.
Patrick, as always, I appreciate you. Have a good weekend, bud.
Thank you, and y'all have a great one, too.
We'll do it. Like I said, it's time to go fishing. And if you if you don't know what you want to do and need some help, easywaves.com is the place to go. Very quickly, got a few things on the calendar of events for this week. Kings Mountain, Calpins National Battlefield, and Walnut Grove Plantation are all taking part in a Revolutionary War reenactment weekend. Several events took place yesterday on Friday, several taking place today. Tomorrow, Cherokee County History and Arts Museum is having a Spirit of Independence tour and living history encampment from 6 to 8. Calpins National Battlefield is having an Overmountain Men encampment and ranger program from 9 to 5. Events are free at Calpins. Kings Mountain National Military Park is going to have the Battle of Kings Mountain 235th Anniversary Encampment and ranger programs from 9 to 5. Those events are free. Walnut Grove is having a festival from 10 p.m. to 4 p.m. Admission is $10. 18 and up, ages 5 to 17, free ages 4 and under. Monday, the Cherokee County History and Arts Museum, the Overmountain Men Living History Encamp from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. is free to the public. City of Gaffney is having a March on Maine and storytelling at the cabin from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., free to the public. Tuesday, Calpins National Battlefield, the night before Kings Mountain Outdoor Drama from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. The event is free. And Wednesday, October 7th, 2015, the 235th anniversary of the Battle of Kings Mountain celebration, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wreath laying begins 11 a.m. There's a keynote speaker at 3. Again, all these events are free to the public at the National Military Parks and Calpins Kings Mountain. Real short one. We're going to have a good show today. We have Mr. Tom King from Anderson, South Carolina. He's here to talk about his book, Waterfall Hikes of the Upstate of South Carolina. And then we're also going to have Eric Dinger from Powder Hook. Access to land and all is a huge consideration when you're trying to get into the outdoors, and Powder Hook is here to help us. So hang on through the break. We'll be back with Mr. Tom King on the other side of it. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time at all, you know how much I enjoy fall. You know, the fall colors, don't have to worry about snakes as much. Spiders don't seem to build spider webs across your doorway every morning. And the leaves are turning, the weather's cooling off. It's just a wonderful time to be outside. I don't do enough of it, but when I do go on a hike, I really set out to enjoy it. I give myself the whole day, take a friend, take my family, and just, you know, don't have a schedule. Just go and do it. And we are fortunate to have, just right down the road in Anderson, South Carolina, a man who has spent his entire life hiking, exploring, finding waterfalls. It's Mr. Tom King. He's got a book out there, Waterfall Hikes of Upstate South Carolina. He's joining me here in the studio. Mr. King, thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having us, Roger.
I saw it was a Pickens County announcement that you were going to have some presentations on your book, and unfortunately a couple of them have passed. One of them is coming up on Monday the 5th, I understand.
Yes, we just had the one on October 1st at the Pickens County Museum. The next one is Monday, October 5th at Oconee County Hiking Club in Walhalla. And then there are two more we're working on. Then the next confirmed one will be November 14th at the Oconee Heritage Center in Walhalla. And then we do have a few more in the discussion phase, but the next one is scheduled actually for June of 2016. So we're booking a little ahead of schedule.
And folks, you can go ahead and put that one on your calendar. If you miss all the ones this fall, there's one in June next year. You have had a long, in reading what you sent me on your life and all, this has been a lifelong interest of yours, hiking.
Yes, it began when I was a teenager with some friends. We always preferred to go to the mountains as opposed to the beach. And we had many adventures along trails, and especially at some waterfalls.
Okay. Well, tell us, before we get started too much, give us a little bit about your life, and you're a lifelong Anderson resident. You've seen a lot of change, but tell us about your life up till now.
Well, it's been 70 years, so it's a long story.
Go ahead. We have all the time you want to take.
I was born and raised in Anderson. Hardly ever left Anderson except to go to the local area around Anderson.
Sure.
But later on, after I went to work and got some education under my belt, I was offered the opportunity to bring some week-long seminars at various colleges and universities across the United States. That happened to be on real estate appraisal.
Okay.
And I've taught some computer classes, which have nothing to do with hiking waterfalls.
No, they get us to where we can go hiking and go to waterfalls and all that. Necessary evil. And you're retired now?
Yes, I worked for the Anderson County.
Okay.
Until I could officially retire. And I retired at an early age. And that gave me opportunity to, for a few years, do some things around the house. Then I resumed my hiking.
Okay.
And started going to the waterfalls. And the more I went to the waterfalls, the more I tried to find additional waterfalls and enjoy them. And one thing kind of led to another as far as the production of this little book.
Okay.
I started going to the waterfalls, even without a camera or any recording device, and then I started going back again, making some photos, and individuals saw the photos and said, why don't you publish the photos? And I kept thinking about that, and I was following some older trail guides, which had become out of date at the time, and I was having trouble finding the trails to the waterfalls. So I just decided I would start making notes and writing down correct, up-to-date directions, and started typing it up, and it evolved into the book, which I self-published to begin with.
Okay.
Printer here in Greenville printed it, and then a publisher found it and took it over and started publishing it.
Well, I know you brought your wife with us, and she said, please don't put me on the air. I did see her nod when you said you had to do a few things around the house after you retired, so that's a good thing. You've been married how many years?
48 years, a few days ago.
Congratulations, congratulations. And children?
Two children, a son that lives here in Greenville and a daughter that lives in Anderson.
Not too far away from home.
Not at all.
And grandchildren?
Two grandchildren. One's a great musician now and planning to attend the university here.
Okay. Very nice. And as you were doing this in your biography, like most of us, you kind of say, you know, I did this as a kid. I enjoyed it. I went to school. I still enjoyed it. I got married, had a family. And boy, that family, you've got to take that time to get that family raised. And now you're back to what you enjoyed doing.
Yes, unfortunately, I had to take a few years off to go to work and raise a family. And then I resumed the hiking.
Well, let's go back to your teenage years and all. Is this something your family was doing? Is this something you just did with some friends? How did it start out? I mean, at 16, when you started doing this, what was the impetus to get you outdoors and going?
Well, at 16 or so, one of my friends got his driver's license.
There we go.
And that started it. We'd get into his station wagon, and we would go camp up beside Whitewater Falls or somewhere else, and overnight, at least one night. And, of course, I had a few opportunities to go into the Smoky Mountains and stay a week at a time and take some trails there.
Yeah.
Walk to the top of I can't think of the top of that mountain right now. Slipped my mind.
It's a tall one, though.
Yes, it truly was.
And so this is what you did instead of being inside watching TV.
That's right.
And in today's world, this is what you would do instead of playing video games.
Yes, yeah. That reminds me of the article that was in the Greenville News a few years ago about the waterfall experience. You know, a waterfall is not just something to look at. It's an experience. And this news article divided the experience into two phases, a physical experience and a spiritual experience. And they mentioned a hiker lost 225 pounds by hiking in the mountains. I presume he went to some waterfalls.
I assume so. There's some very tall ones up and down.
And then they mentioned the spiritual experience, which is different for each person. And when I go to a waterfall, I certainly have a spiritual experience because I remember in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth.
Right.
Then the flood came along and rearranged the surface of the earth.
Right.
And what we're left with today is very much what we see after the flood. It's changed very little, in my opinion, according to my beliefs.
Okay. And you're right. There are two. And water, I'm a trout fisherman. Mm-hmm. So when I go hiking or something, it's a means to get me to a piece of water that I can fish in, whether it be upstream, downstream. But the sound of water is... It means a lot to different people and their different sounds depending on what stretch of water you're on. But that roar at the bottom of a waterfall is really impressive.
You mentioned the roar. I can give you a story about that.
Please do.
At Issaquena Falls, a few years ago, I went to Issaquena Falls, and over the years I've seen it dry, and I've seen a lot of water coming over Issaquena Falls. Well, this particular time I was there, it was shortly after we'd had some very heavy rains, and the sound of the waterfall coming over the falls was so loud it had to reach the decibel level of a jet engine.
Really?
It was hurting my ears, and while I was there, a few folks came down from the Forest Service just to see the volume of water. And they oohed and awed, went out on the platform and observed the water for just a few minutes and decided they had to leave. And, of course, I followed right behind them because it was deafening.
Yeah.
But it was a tremendous amount of water. And I didn't even have my camera with me that time.
Well, I'm sorry my show wasn't on the air because when I end my show every week, I say, and the last word is, don't forget your camera.
That is true.
I'm sorry I wasn't around to remind you back then. But that is, you know, that's something we don't think about a whole lot. When we think of waterfalls, we think of normal flowage and all. But I guess over the years, you'll see it all, won't you?
There are small flows of water over the creek, over the rock structure that are beautiful. I overuse the word beautiful because I can describe almost any waterfall as being beautiful.
Sure.
But there are small flows and there are great flows. And even when there's no water coming over the waterfall or very little water, we still have a very beautiful rock structure in color.
Hmm.
I recently saw in a coffee table book just a section of one of my photos that was cut out and put in that coffee table book of a rock structure at the base of a waterfall. But I have the entire waterfall as well as that rock structure. But the photographer, I think, wanted to make an artistic expression out of that rock structure, that beautifully colored rock structure at the base of that waterfall.
Now, speaking of that, you bring up an interesting thing here. Everybody thinks about the water coming on, but we don't think about what's underneath it. Do we have a lot of varied rock around the upstate of South Carolina in the mountains and all, or is it pretty much the same one waterfall to the next, you're going to have the same type rock is coming over?
Just about each waterfall has a different type of rock. Now, I'm no geologist or naturalist, so I don't know the minerals or the chemical content of those rocks, but they vary from yellow to orange to red, various shades of brown and gray. They're granite, maybe limestone, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But some of them are very beautiful.
And they're different for each waterfall, practically.
It very much is different for each waterfall.
Oh, wow. Well, this is a good start. We're going to have to take a break here in a few minutes. How many waterfalls have you been to in upstate South Carolina?
Well, there are 25 that I listed in the book, and that's about how many I've been to. I've been to a couple more than that.
Okay. If we had to pick in the last closing seconds of this segment a favorite, your favorite would be?
If I had to choose a favorite, I guess I would have to say Twin Falls in Pickens County.
Okay.
It has a beautiful plunge at the top and then spreads out over a very rough rock structure as it proceeds into a creek.
Very nice. Well, we're going to go to break. Stay with us. We're going to hear a lot more from Mr. King about his book, about his pictures, and what's upcoming for him. So hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water on the other side. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We rejoin our conversation with Mr. Tom King. Anderson, South Carolina, has written a book about South Carolina waterfalls of the upstate of South Carolina. We've talked a lot about the water, the rocks around it and all, but you've been really involved on the volunteer basis with the Forest Service, with the Department of Natural Resources, state park systems. Tell us a little bit about what you've been able to do with them. And why you do it?
I guess I do it because I enjoy it. I did volunteer. I got in touch with the different departments and said, do you need a volunteer? And, of course, they needed volunteers
all
the time. And I started telling them that I was available, and they started calling me and asking me to go to various trails and accompany even their forest rangers and other service personnel when they had a chainsaw for safety purposes.
Sure.
And then I trained using a crosscut saw and helped use a two-man crosscut saw to remove some large trees from some trails. One time, don't mean any offense to the Forest Service. Hope no one from the Forest Service is listening. But they were training their firefighters on a particular trail. And they found a lot of rebar sticking up on the sides of wooden steps that they had anchored onto that trail. And they called on me, an older man, to go up there and remove all that 16-inch, 18-inch long rebar out of the ground because their firefighters were having trouble with it. Why they didn't let those young, strong firefighters pull that up in an hour or two while they were there instead of calling me when I had to spend almost a whole day removing it with a heavy pack on my back and a five-pound sledgehammer in my hand.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, goodness. But you're right. They didn't need volunteers. Do you think they would, if somebody was listening today, wanted to volunteer and help them out, you think they'd want the help?
I'm sure they would accept anyone who's able to walk a trail and carry a pair of clippers or a sling blade or a lopper or something to cut the brush away from the trail. They need all the help they can get.
Well, when you think of hiking waterfalls, there are two things that come to mind in a lot of people's minds, and that's snakes and bears.
Yes.
You ever seen any bears?
I have not seen any bears, but as I have told some folks, I have smelled some bears.
Okay.
Because they do have an odor.
They do have an odor.
And you can sometimes smell a bear when it's close to you long before you see it. So I have never seen a bear on a trail. I mean, driving through the Smoky Mountains, I've seen them,
right.
Yes.
But not any of your hikes?
Not on a hike, no.
You've been lucky.
Fortunately,
yeah. What about snakes? You told me you had a story to tell us about snakes.
Well, I've seen a lot of snakes in pools right alongside where children are wading, and at the base of waterfalls, you hear people hollering, snake, snake, and I get close enough to it to identify it as a non-poisonous snake.
Right.
But the most frightening encounter that I've had with a snake was at a little shoal where I was precariously balanced on a couple of rocks in the creek with my camera, didn't even have a tripod or a hiking stick with me to move the snake out of the way. But I saw what I thought was a limb coming down the creek, and I was going to make an exposure with my camera. And as that limb got closer, I realized it was a snake. As it got a little bit closer, I recognized the pattern on it, and it was our local timber rattlesnake.
Uh-huh.
And the current of the water was going to carry it right between my feet. And I actually, for the first and ever time, actually became a little bit frightened because I was afraid it would sense the heat coming off my legs and strike at one of my legs.
Uh-huh.
So the only thing I had was a camera around my neck. So I removed the camera strap from around my neck, held it down into the water, and let the current carry the snake's head on top of the camera strap. And then I jerked the camera strap up and pushed it over to the left and let the current of the water take the snake on away from me, where it crawled out onto the shore and went on about its business. So we don't need to be afraid of a snake, and we don't need to take a stick and start beating the poor snake to death. It
sure
has as much right to live its life out as we do.
That's exactly right, unless they're inside my house. When I go to his house, I expect him to be there. When he comes to my house, he expects me to be. But, yeah, you're right. They have a place in nature. And when you're out there, you know, most snakes are just as afraid of you as you are of them.
They try to get out of your way.
That's
first.
Right.
The only time they will attack you is when you step up on them too close or startle them.
Right.
And then they will fight back.
The book. Tell us why you wrote the book.
Well, the main purpose of writing the book was to provide updated information because of the relatively outdated information in other trail guides. And it was especially to get this information into the hands of people who would enjoy the book and use the book, go to these waterfalls, take the mountain trails, and enjoy them.
So the book, how many pages?
About 300, over 300 pages.
And trails? You've got maps in the book?
Well, there are 125 waterfalls.
Okay. And each one of them has a little description of...
The waterfall has a description of the waterfall and complete directions as how to get to the waterfall.
Okay. And how do people get the book?
Well, the book is available online as well as all the Park Service areas in the upstate and many bookstores.
Very nice. Mr. King, thank you so much for coming to Woods and Water. I want to get a copy of your book before you leave. Might have you sign it for me.
And, I'll certainly do that.
And hope I can hit some waterfalls that I find in the book that I can get to with a bum knee.
That would be great. I have a bum knee, too.
Very good. Well, thank you for coming on. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope you enjoyed the segment with Mr. King. I just met him this morning. Really great gentleman. Wish I had more time to spend with him. Hope you will make one of his meetings. Hope you'll look for his book when you're out in the stores and all. Look for it on the internet. Get a copy of it. I have a copy. It's signed. I'm lucky. This is one of the perks of being what I do on Saturdays. I'm looking forward to reading it and getting out and finding some of these waterfalls. Access for hunters, for people wanting to go fishing is a huge concern in today's environment with so much development going on. We're losing our habitat in some parts of the country. Powderhook is a company I've had seen some press releases on. I've seen some of what they've done. So I went to the source. I've got Eric Dinger on the phone from Powderhook. Eric, how are you today?
Morning, Roger. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Very good. Thank you for coming on. And I know you have a pressing appointment, so let's get right to it. Tell us about yourself and tell us what Powderhook in general is.
Sure. Well, my story and the story of Powderhook overlap in many ways. I grew up in the other south in the United States, South Dakota.
Okay.
far cry from where you're at.
Boy, it is.
We speak a little different up there, don't you know?
Sure. And, y'all. yeah.
So growing up in South Dakota, always had pheasant hunting and walleye fishing, and it was always really easy for me to get out. My dad ran a grain elevator in our little town in northeastern South Dakota. And so as a young boy, you know, hunting and fishing were just kind of part of our culture, just what we did. You know, no more a thing we did than who we were at that point. And probably a lot of your listeners can relate to that growing up in the woods. It's really just kind of who you are. It's not even something you do.
It's exactly who and I am.
Right, me too. And what happened was I ended up moving to Minnesota. Dad got a new job selling corn and beans for DeKalb and Asgro.
Okay.
And got that job in southwest Minnesota, which was way, way more heavily farmed, farm-to-the-fence roads kind of deal. And in the process of going from South Dakota to Minnesota, we went from hunting during the hunting season, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week to maybe 2, 3, 4 times a month, you know, once a weekend kind of deal. And
sure.
And then I moved down to Nebraska to go to college, and the problem got worse. You know, it would be the type of thing where 2, 3, 4 times a season, I would make a trip back home to, you know, go hunt in South Dakota or go hunt with Dad somewhere in Minnesota. And what dawned on me was that the reason that was happening was because I didn't have a place to go. So started a business my senior year, had a good little run with that, sold it 10 years later, and I kind of put myself in a position to fix something, solve a problem I cared about, make an investment in doing so. And that access problem had always kind of lurked in the back of my mind because it's a personal problem. It's the thing that stands between me and the thing I love to do most. And so that's what Powderhook is we're a bunch of nerds trying to make it easier to find a place to go hunt and fish.
Well, you know, we need you guys.
Yeah.
Access is a huge problem, as you know and as I know. What does Powderhook do to give hunters tools to find those places to go hunt, fish, get outdoors?
Sure, great question. So the first thing we did, being the nerds we are, is we aggregated or put together in one place on one website all of the places that we could find to hunt and fish in the United States. So we put together a map that's got, and it's a free map, by the way, at powderhook.com, that has about 650,000 places to hunt nationwide. In fact, we did a contest about a year ago now, where we said if we didn't have a place on our map to hunt within 50 miles of where you were standing, no matter where you were standing in the United States, we'd send you a decal. And we ended up spending three.
Three.
So there's a ton of places to hunt. Now, I'll grant the audience, certainly growing up where I did in South Dakota, there is a big difference between a good place to hunt and just a place to hunt.
Sure.
But that where we started was just finding a place to hunt for everybody. And so if you use our map, free, you don't even need an account. Just go to powderhook.com. That was our mission statement. What we're all about, Roger, is access. And so our mission statement is access for all. And that means that whether I can pay or not, I should have a place to go.
Sure.
And, you know, that kind of stems back to my experience as a college kid. You know, I didn't have the money to pay for a place to go. And so for me to hunt, I had to drive, you know, 6-7 hours back to where we grew up in order to be able to do it. Well, that's dumb. And so access for all means, first, we got to find all the free places to go. That's available at powderhoof.com. And then the second part is, as you mentioned earlier, we're starting to build some apps. And those apps are designed to give a layer of quality back over that information. So
okay.
if you can imagine 650,000 places to hunt nationwide, that's a lot. How could we ever know if one was good or bad?
Sure.
And so what we've done is we're building these apps so that we can layer over our map what we call a heat map, or it looks kind of like a thunderstorm map.
Yes,
a,
it does.
You know, like a radar map, right?
Right.
So what we're saying then to the person who uses Powderhoof eventually is, hey, here's a place to go, and if you're hunting waterfowl, you can use our waterfowl layer, and we'll give you kind of a thunderstorm prediction for whether or not there's waterfowl migrating through the area.
Okay.
Now, that's not going to mean there's going to be ducks on the specific pond that you're going to hunt.
Right.
But it does mean, hey, you know, this time of year or about right now is when the field is, that kind of thing. So that's what we're up to, Roger. It's a great, big, tough, hairy, hard problem to solve, but we're trying to take a bite out of it every day.
Well, I noticed when you go to Powderhoof, it automatically locates you.
Yep.
Because when I pulled up Powderhoof, it pegged me to Greenville, South Carolina, and whatever's around me. And as you pan across the state, there are a lot of places out there, and you've got them marked, and what's available to hunt, what's available to fish, boat ramps, that sort of thing, lakes, which is a great tool. I've got your Whitetail app, and you're right.
Sure.
It is a heat map. It looks like it's raining pretty hard. Let's see, in South Carolina, it looks like Anderson's getting crushed. On down below Augusta, you know, there's a little bit over in York and Chester County. That's because I posted a couple of reports there, so I know those are good. Tell us a little bit about the app, because right now deer hunting is getting into full swing. This is a user-driven app because it needs reports to generate the heat map you're talking about. So tell us a little bit about the hunting app.
Sure. You bet. Thanks for asking. It's called Deer Tracker. It's available for free. Just hit deertrackerapp.com. And well, we built it in partnership with QDMA, and probably a lot of your listeners down that way are pretty familiar with QDMA, being from just south of you in Georgia.
That's right.
And what we're trying to do is a few things. Number one, like I said, we're trying to give people an idea of when deer are moving, so that when they're looking at our map, they can get an idea that, you know, maybe today is the day I got to take a day off work because, hey, people are seeing deer moving during the shooting light today.
Right.
But the second thing, and what that partnership with QDMA means, is we're trying to affect the way deer hunting works for everybody, both new people and experts. Because what we're finding in research is that when we try to get somebody into hunting and they go out and have a bad experience or a few bad experiences in a row, they're not really likely to come back.
Correct.
And in an era when we are so tied, and each individual hunter is so tied to the need to create new hunters, this app is going to, over time, help create a better experience for new people getting in. It's sort of like scouting through your phone, in a way.
Right.
Seeing what's out there, seeing what's moving, in a way that maybe young people and new people to the sport are going to be more comfortable with.
Understood.
On top of that, the data will go back to QDMA. For one of the first of its kind research studies, where we're going to be able to have the thousands and thousands of reports that are made in Deer Tracker, tied back to like weather and barometric pressure and wind. And so for the first time ever, that QDMA or Powderhoof is aware of, we'll have like this longitudinal quantitative study of deer movement relative to weather. So we can really say empirically, when the pressure drops, deer move X versus Y when the pressure rises, which is kind of fun. Like there's cool sort of, like I said in the beginning, we're kind of nerdy. So there's some cool data in there that the nerdier of your deer hunting listeners will enjoy.
Well, and not so much the nerdier of us, but just like me, I don't have a whole lot of time to get out in the woods. But if you come up with information and QDMA sends it out to me in an email that says, hey, look, our research over the last couple of years with Deer Tracker says that when the barometric pressure goes down, deer are moving, then that lets me look at my weather for where I'm going to hunt and say, hey, front coming through, pressure's going down. I need to set aside this time right here, the time that I would normally just spend at any, you know, let's go this afternoon. I might focus a little more on the times where the research says the deer should be moving.
Right. We always like to say, don't use it as a reason to skip a day in the stand, but use it to create a new one, right?
So you're telling me, my wife listening, of course, that I shouldn't just give up that afternoon and just want to go, but now I need to schedule another day to go?
Yeah, and I think if you pull up the app and you say, honey, look, CMA says today is the day. A man must go.
A man must go. And at my house, you know, we laugh about that and all, but we eat a lot of venison. In fact, we buy very little beef in the stores, and we eat that venison. So, you know, I have a standing order. Look, we probably need to fill the freezer again this year. So, you know, I might swing both of those.
Yeah, I mean, as a provider for your family, I don't think there's any excuse not to be out there right now. In fact, I don't know why you're talking to me.
Well, okay, this conversation over. I'm going deer hunting.
Oh boy.
I will be doing a lot of that over the next month and you know, I've already, like I said, I've already posted, let's see, my reports. If I go to my reports, I posted a couple of deer sightings over in Chester and a couple, a harvest report in Lawrence. So I've already had a good season, seen some deer and gotten one. Where is this? Okay, so you got the research going on, and I want to emphasize one thing. This is a user-driven app. So tell us a little bit of how the user helps you with this app.
Right, Roger. Thanks for pointing that out. So, you know, when you think about a map like that, like a radar map, scientists have evolved ways of predicting the weather and looking at the weather without people having to report it. Right? So we can watch TV and see the weather on our TV, and that's all driven by computers and fancy apparatuses and things like that. Well, for deer and for deer hunters, there is no such thing. And so what we have to do is we have to rely on the abilities and the sightings and the eyes of deer hunters. And so what the app does is it takes a report. So Roger, you put in a report that says, I saw,
three bucks.
I saw three bucks, and they were three mature bucks, and they're moving during the day.
Okay.
Well, what that's going to do in our map is it's going to heat up the map in that area, because what the map is solving for is for people who are seeing daytime deer movement. And the bigger the deer, the brighter the map gets. So I'll explain it more simply.
Okay.
So the map shows more heat the further away from sunset you see a big deer, or the further away from sunrise you see a big deer.
Really?
So what we're solving for is bigger deer moving closer to the middle of the day, meaning most likely that you're seeing peak chasing, peak running type activity.
So the
we don't actually report the rut, because I think the rut is pretty well understood. And according to QDMA's research, the peak of the rut, which is when most hunting maps are sort of the brightest.
Right.
Is actually a terrible time to be in the woods, because as you and I both know, Roger, the peak of the rut is when deer bed down for a couple days.
Right.
So this map solves for daytime deer movement, both big bucks seen during the day and then fawns separated from does and does chasing, that kind of activity happening when the sun's up. That way we can tell people you're most likely to see that stuff happening when you can actually shoot.
More of your pre-rut activity then.
Yeah, pre-rut, and then there's a second rut.
Sure.
In a lot of areas, a third rut in some areas I've come to learn. So, it's solving for your best chance. The map will be brightest when you have the best chance to see deer moving during the day.
Very cool. Okay, Eric, give us the website one more time, and then give us how to get the app.
Sure, thanks. So you go to your App Store or Google Play and search for Deer Tracker. Or you can always on your phone or on your computer hit deertrackerapp.com.
Okay.
www.deertrackerapp.com.
And then Powderhook.
Completely free.
Yeah. Yep. And both of them. And Powderhook is powderhook.com. That's Powder H-O-O-K.
Yep, like gunpowder fish hook.
There you go. Eric, I appreciate you making time to come on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. Nice to finally catch up with you.
Yes, sir. And, hey, as duck season gets closer, I know you got a duck app out there. We might have to talk again.
All right. That'd be great.
Okay. Sure. Thanks, Eric.
See you.
See you. Yes, every once in a while there is technology that I appreciate and can actually use. If you haven't heard, real quickly towards the end of the show, there's a allegedly record North Carolina buck that was killed, and it was all over news stories and outdoor magazines and all. It's a fake. He took the antlers and screwed them on a deer that I assume he killed himself. And now, to make things worse, he is looking at 4 wildlife violations. And, you know, I often wonder when I hear people say, oh, you know, I run with some renegades. I know some. And they tell me they killed a deer. And I always wonder what kind of story you tell. And then you have to remember what story you told, because you may want to make sure it stays the same. But now it's Nick Davis of Elkin, North Carolina. He got the shed horns. He bought them from a deer farm in Pennsylvania. And he's charged with closed season deer hunting, unlawful possession of an illegally taken deer, and 2 charges for failure to tag and register a deer. So, you know, crime does not pay, even when it comes to deer hunting. So let's keep it honest out there and keep it ethical. Be a sportsman. That's what being a hunter is all about. Chuck Norris for this week. Let's see. Chuck Norris can kill your imaginary friends. How about Death once had a near Chuck Norris experience. How's that? Anyway, it's been fun. Hope you enjoyed it. Make time to get out there. Be careful. Take the back roads. And like I said to Mr. King, don't ever forget your camera. I'll see you next week.
WGTK FM, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson. Conservative Talk, 94.5.